This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our topic today, the world of gardening and botanical gardens. My guest by telephone to Washington, D.C., is Ms. Holly Harmer Shimizu, Director of the United States Botanical Gardens in Washington, D.C., and the Director-at-Large for the American Association of Botanical Gardens and Arboreta. Welcome to the program and to your alma mater, Temple University.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you on this show to talk about my favorite subject.
Well, it sounds to me like you've been talking about it and been involved in it for a number of years. You're a Temple grad.
I am. In fact, when I started at Temple Ambler to study horticulture back in 1972, it was a whole new world for me to recognize that I had found something that I loved with a passion, but also that I could choose as a profession. And it's the kind of thing that I think I feel so lucky for because, you know, you're able to work in something that you really, really love. And so it's not like work.
Mm. Was it that way when you were a student? Did it start out feeling that way?
Well, yes. I mean, with the exception of some of the really hard classes, you know, I was very passionate about plants because I knew I loved them, and I didn't know exactly whether I wanted to go into food gardening, food production, or nursery landscape management. I really didn't know, but I just knew that it was going to be something in this field of horticulture. And at Temple, we were exposed to some really great teachers, and we had both indoor and outdoor experiences. So one of the great teachers, her name was Miss Viola Anders, and she took us out to the flower garden, and she gave us each a little patch of land, and we were able to dig and plant and, you know, really get to know the kind of things you need to understand gardening. And so it was a positive experience, and, you know, now Ambler continues with an exceptionally strong program in horticulture and landscape architecture, and so I'd love to go back there. I went back probably, I think, 9 months ago and gave a lecture, and they really attract very fine students.
Well, it sounds as if you were one of their main students when they look back and all that you have become since being there.
Oh, thank you.
My goodness. I just think it's marvelous, though, to have had that little patch of ground that you could have begun that way.
Very much so, because I think that a lot of people think gardening is just so easy, and then they start to do it and they realize that it's actually much more. There is a lot to it, and I think it's a lot of art and it's a lot of science. And some people who have a knack for gardening just can do it without learning. But a lot of people really need to, you know, you need to study chemistry and you need to understand fertilizers and environments and all sorts of things to really be good in horticulture. So you really understand not only what the plants need but how they function. And I think a lot about plants in nature as well.
Hmm. How has horticulture changed over the years since you first began?
Well, I can paint that picture well, I think, by going back to my days at Temple Ambler when I was taking a class in landscape design. And at that time, we were taught that with a house, you wanted to have a shade tree, you wanted to have foundation plantings at the front of the house, and everything was functional. And that was the approach, and that was current. That's how it was. And it's not like that anymore, because although plants do provide important functions in our lives, we look at it much more creatively. And so we look now at the landscape and the garden as sanctuary, as a place of really outdoor living, of creativity. We want to have gardens that appeal to five senses. We really have become more sophisticated in the way that we see gardens and the way that we see our outdoor spaces that we live in and that we are able to create. And even if it's, you know, a walk in the woods, one of the big trends, too, is the native plant trend, because we've gone from thinking that, well, if we really want something fabulous, it needs to come from another country. It's not like that now. Now we recognize that the plants that are native in our own regions are fabulous. Mm-hmm. For example, our native dogwood, our native redbud, our side-of-the-road plants like goldenrod and coneflowers and things like that, we took them for granted because they were just common. But now we're realizing that they're very beautiful. They're important for attracting pollinators to our gardens.
You've mentioned the dogwood. I have to interrupt you because we lost both of our dogwoods. Is the dogwood time frame limited as far as the number of years that it's expected to live?
Well, it does, yes. It's not a long-lived tree, but there have been some problems with dogwoods in this area. And one of the things that I tell people to try to do with their dogwoods is to plant them as you might see them in nature, which is as an understory tree, meaning that they're not out in bright, bright, full sun.
Oh.
They actually are getting some shade. And they like to grow in a rich, moist soil. And they, you know, they're really not a tree that does well in extremely stressful conditions.
Mm,
if you
want
to try again.
Both of those, when we... And we've been there a few decades, but both of them were out in the full sun. Now that, as I think back on it,
yes.
And bit by bit, both the
yes.
pink and the white disappeared.
Yes, and they're so beautiful. I would recommend that you retry, fix the soil well with organic matter, and plant them where they get a little bit of shade, especially during the really hot part of the day, and you probably will have better luck with them. There are a lot of new selections that are better prepared to not get diseases. And so you might even want to try one of the new selections. There are a whole host of them. Some developed at Rutgers University, others. I know Temple has a lot of them. You know, the Ambler campus has a wonderful arboretum now. Mm-hmm. And so around dogwood season, I would encourage you to go out there and see them.
Oh, that's wonderful. I see. You see all the kind of advice that's needed? I'm just an example of people who need to be able to have that kind of information back and forth from those of you who have really studied and know the plants and know the gardens.
Well, yeah, we find that a lot, that, you know, people really, we love to be able to get people really more involved with their gardens, and it's really important to know the good plants to grow for your region, you know, the ones that are really going to thrive and how to get them to thrive. And you don't have to have really high-maintenance plants, which is another reason why we like to grow natives.
Mm-hmm. How much does horticulture concentrate more on the gardening part than on the trees themselves, trees that once start out as very small, intimate features and then begin to grow and grow and grow?
Well, there are a lot of branches of horticulture, and I don't really have a specialty. I really love all plants, although I've focused a lot on herbs. But I've learned that herbs are actually plants that include, you know, things like thyme and rosemary and mm-hmm. lavender, but they even include herbal trees.
Oh.
But that's a bit of a sidetrack from your question, because there are some specialties that focus only on trees. For example, people who are called arborists, and they really deal just with trees, and they will give you advice on, you know, how to prune your trees, how to fertilize them, and most importantly, I think, how to extend their life. And then we have a lot of focus on perennials, and Temple Ambler has a great person named Stephanie Cohen, who's an expert in dealing with and teaching about perennials. And so we're really seeing a lot of specialties within horticulture, and that, you know, you can sort of find your own niche. And my own niche has really become, you know, working in public gardens with horticulture and education and growing plants and inspiring people about why plants are important in our lives.
You particularly, I think, like to work with children or about what children
do.
Like. How did you come to that, and what do you actually see different that you do with children than, say, with adults?
Well, this is very important, because if you really want to reach out and try to get people to love plants, the way to do that is to get them when they're young. If children, say, starting at about the age of 3, have the opportunity to actually work with plants and soil and earthworms and compost and flowers and experience the garden, they will will end up most likely as adults who care about the green world. If a person is deprived of that, they will not have a sensitivity to it, most likely as an adult, and they'll just be deprived of a love of that. And so that's the reason why so many of us are recognizing that we've got to get people young, young, young. One of the things we have found in our field is that the people who really love it and are dedicated to it all can tell you about childhood experiences that were enormously powerful, whether it was just walking in the woods or, in my case, my grandfather in Rhode Island had a fabulous garden that I just loved, you know, and I remember the smells and the harvests and all of that. So that's really, I think it's the most effective way to make people love plants is to start young.
You mentioned the grandfather. It seems to me that the grandparents have a whole lot of influence on this part of the life of a child. It's particularly
You're so
the earth.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of parents are too busy, and, you know, we are hectic. Our lives are hectic these days. And so oftentimes it really is grandparents who have some time to garden and can really engage the children in this activity. And so we try, I mean, especially in cities, you know, a lot of children don't recognize that food comes from plants. They actually think that, you know, food comes from the grocery store. And we really need to make this connection. And so we try to do that here at the U.S. Botanic Garden, and a lot of gardens are doing it. And I tell you, one of the best ways is through community garden programs. Brooklyn Botanic Garden up in New York City has a superb community garden program where you can come in, have your own plot, you can grow what you want, you can harvest and compare harvests. And these are life-changing when you give kids this opportunity. They really can be very life-changing, and I've met adults who have expressed that.
Now, you use the term botanic. I said botanical. What is the correct description?
They're both correct, and there is not a difference in what they mean. And we have, for example, in New York, you have the Brooklyn Botanical Garden and the New York Botanic Garden. And they're very particular that you refer to them in the correct way, but there's no difference in what they mean.
We are on telephone to Washington, D.C., with my guest, the director of the United States Botanical Gardens in Washington, Miss Holly Harmer Shimizu, and talk about some of the things that are happening with you and also with your gardens there and with the Longwood Gardens here in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yes, well, one of the things that's happening here at the U.S. Botanic Garden is, you know, we're always developing new exhibits and new ideas and really trying to get people engaged with plants in all different ways. And so right now we're setting up our orchid show, and we're doing that because we have a huge conservatory here on the National Mall just near the Capitol, and we have about 10,000 different orchids that we can bring to show the public the absolute beauty of orchids and the interesting and complex way that these flowers are pollinated. They have stories of deception and attraction and amazing. They're just truly amazing once you start to learn about them. And so it's a way that we can color up our place in winter and teach people and how not only how to grow these in the home, but also how they're endangered in the wild because many of them have been over-collected.
Did you say 10,000?
Yes, we have 10,000 orchids. And we also are partnering with the Smithsonian Institution Horticultural Services to partner with them to share their plants with our plants. And so we get a double dose of orchid varieties from using their collection also.
What is the relationship of your department there and other botanic or botanical units in different parts
well,
of the...
Well, we do have partnerships with many different botanic gardens, and we have an unusual connection here because we're actually part of the U.S. Capitol. I work for the architect of the Capitol who oversees the whole Capitol complex, and he or this person reports to the Joint Committee on the Library of Congress, who is responsible for the oversight of the Botanic Garden. And, Jean, I think you might find it interesting, but we actually go back in concept to George Washington because he said he loved plants and agriculture and gardening, and he said we need a botanic garden at the heart of government because we want this to be a national city, that, you know, as our capital. And so he wrote this letter to the commissioners of the District of Columbia in the late 1700s, and he unfortunately died before it became a reality, but it did start up in 1820.
Well, that's news. That I don't know that many people know that.
They don't. No, this is something that we are in the process of getting a book published, which traces the history of the U.S. Botanic Garden, because it also is very closely tied to the history of horticulture in our country.
Now, how do you tie, if you tie at all, with Longwood Gardens, which I understood from a little article that I read recently on that quoted you, that you're described as a Longwood Mafia member?
Yes, that's true. Well, Longwood Gardens is really one of the premier public gardens in North America. It was formerly the estate of Pierre S. DuPont, who was very wealthy and had a true passion for gardens. And so he created a series of incredible gardens with fountains, with lights, and an Italian garden, and a rock garden, and woodlands, and, I mean, just extraordinary gardens that he put so much money into. And when he died, he left Longwood to become a public garden, and he left it very well endowed. So they have, you know, very good funding, and they have actually 1,000 acres.
It is large.
It's very large, and it's in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, and it's very well known for the seasonal displays. The holiday show with poinsettias is spectacular, and every season when you go there, I mean, it's an extraordinary display garden, and they have a very good classes as well in all different aspects of gardening.
Now, do I understand that in your student days, back when you were still a student, you did some work down there? Or
yeah, so I, let's see, it was after I had graduated from Temple in horticulture, I was lucky enough to get a summer internship at Longwood Gardens. And so I went there and worked for an entire summer, and I was just in awe of Longwood because I had no idea that a public garden could be so grand and so expanded and so interesting. So really, for me, was one of the great opportunities that I had. And it also kind of firmed up for me that I wanted to work in the public garden. And then there are a lot of students that have graduated from Longwood, which is why you refer to the Longwood Mafia, because, you know, that in our field, it's not really a huge field. So we all are connected. And one of the ways that we're connected, quite honestly, is through Longwood Gardens.
Huh.
And I met some of the friends that I'm still, you know, very friendly with in my profession through that program.
Is there any structural relationship, though, between Longwood and your unit down in Washington?
Well, we do have one kind of link to them in that the current director, Fred Roberts, is kind enough to let one of his very talented design leaders named Trey Frommey work with us to come up with some designs for some of our shows and exhibits. And so Trey and some of his design staff have come down here and done design charrettes with our staff, and it's been incredibly productive. And so that's the way that we have been working together. So it's not a formal link, but it's a link of really exchanging resources and talent. And they're very generous about that at Longwood.
Now, Fred Roberts is the current director, and I understand he's stepping down.
Yes, he is. I believe he's, I think he's going to be moving back to Connecticut, where he grew up. And he's been there for, you know, quite a long time and made a lot of, you know, a lot of interesting things happen there.
What do you see as the future for Longwood Gardens?
Well, I think that Longwood will continue to, you know, look to the future, and I think one of the things that we all see is we're going to do more with the concept of environmental gardening, sustainability, and that is giving people a better sense of, you know, what plants to grow and what selections to grow. And also, I think Longwood has the capability to do exceptional design, and they have, you know, a lot of really talented designers there, so that you can go there for ideas for the home garden, because I know that they often have home demonstration gardens, and I think that they're a really good idea because they're done at the human scale. So if you want to redesign your garden, you could go to Longwood and you could see a demonstration garden that would be similar to something that you would want. And you could take notes or photographs and say, okay, this is what we're going to work for, you know, to get the kind of space we want in our outdoor garden. So I think giving ideas on design, home gardening, I think with the education programs continuing to develop, we have become a lot more sophisticated in American gardening. I've seen a whole wave of talented designers who really are very, very creative, and it's almost like they're, painters and doing very sophisticated designs. And American culture, I think, is starting in the gardening world to have a culture unto itself. And we didn't have that for a long, long time because we're such a young country. And I think we were sort of copying the European styles.
Do you think you could ever be persuaded to come back to the Philadelphia area?
Oh, my gosh. I'm not sure. I'm not opposed to it completely, but I do love the Washington, D.C. area, I have to say. It's a very interesting place to work and live. And, you know, my children have grown up here. But I'm always open. I'm always open to ideas and changes.
Well, some of us probably would like to see you open to ideas and making certain that Longwood continues its growth and development.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. It's interesting as you talk about gardens within cities. You know how, of course, the Victory Gardens go way back to the wars when they were having those, but also so many of the small urban areas have carved out a block or two and had little farmette, where they've had gardening. And,
yes.
Of course, they're talking a lot now, not just plants, but food.
Don't you love those?
They're lovely. They're just lovely.
Yeah, because you're very lucky in Philadelphia because you've got the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society, and they try to do a lot of work to help green up the city and with community gardens. That's one of the strong programs around the country is the program in Philadelphia. We have a program here in D.C. called GROW, which is Garden Resources of Washington, and I was on the board there for a while, and we used to go around and visit our community gardens in the city that GROW was involved with. And one of the things I learned from that, Jean, is that it's not only the gardening and the food, it's the community that develops.
Yes.
It's the personal relationships. It's the coming together of people. It's all the good things that happen from having a garden. It's sharing. It really... There's so many benefits that happen as a result of a community garden.
You see a strengthening of what happens among the neighbors looking out for each other.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely, yes.
So true. And then a lot of them, you know, like on a Friday night, a Saturday, you know, they have dinners, and then they even get performers to come, and they can get the children involved, and they do. All these things are spin-offs from, you know, having the garden. And it, you know how a lot of times in neighborhoods, people stay to the side and to themselves. This brings them out.
It does. It
does
indeed.
It brings them out.
And incidentally, before we close down, where would people go? How would they get to the botanical gardens? They may not know precisely where it is. In Washington, D.C., where is it located? And who might they call to know how to get there?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. We really recommend people take the metro here. If you were coming from Philadelphia, you could just take the train and walk over from Union Station. But if you're in D.C., do take the metro because parking here is hard because we're located just near the United States Capitol, and our new neighbor is the Museum of the American Indian. Mm-hmm. And so we're the large glass house, and we're open every day of the year. And we have a great website, which is usbg.gov, that will give you directions as well as what's happening, a list of classes and shows and activities. And I'll give you the phone number as well. It's 202-225-8333.
That's so wonderful. I remember walking through that glass building occasionally when I was working the hill and just walking to the station through that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I hope you'll come back, Jean, because I'd love to show you some of our new exhibits.
Well, I'd love to come back and to see you, and I'd love to see you in the general Philadelphia area.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Are there other things you'd like to share about ideas that people should start looking at now that the winter is getting, well, hopefully it's getting over as they start for the spring? What should they be doing?
Well, that's a good question. I was just noticing that we have some of our earliest plants blooming. Our witch hazels are blooming, and our snowdrops are blooming. And so to me, this is a signal that I should get outside and start pruning some of my shrubs and trees, cutting things back, raking up where it's all messy, cutting things back, and digging the soil, because the soil's not frozen yet, and so I'm able to do some work in just mulching and digging and tidying up, because once March comes, that's when I actually will dig and divide things, move things around, and start planting cold, hardy things. But it's good to get out now. Another thing to be doing is analyzing your garden. Look at it, look at the design, and question it. Ask yourself questions like, well, does it hold together? How does it look in winter? Do I have enough evergreens? Do I have varieties of textures and forms? What do I want to change? Do the walkways, you know, work and connect? Do I have fabulous views? Because if you don't, you need to make them. So, you know, creating a garden is one of the most wonderful things. As I said, it's really like a painting. You know, you can keep working on it, and the more you work on it, the better it gets.
Oh, that's very inspiring. And also, I hadn't thought about this being the time to start thinking about pruning, too.
Yes, it is.
All right, because I have some things that really need to be pruned back.
Yeah, so get some good pruning shears. I like Felcos, but just sturdy ones. Don't buy the cheap ones, and because they're well worth the investment. And get outside, because the fresh air is good for all of us.
Well, I thank you so much for talking with me, Holly Harmer Shimizu.
Thank you, Jean, and same. I love talking to you, and I also am so thrilled to be a Temple graduate.
Oh, we are delighted that you hold that mantra of being a Temple grad. Thank you so much for being my guest on University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, host and executive producer of University Forum. Please send your comments or questions on University Forum programs to me by email at jemoore@wrti.org or call my voicemail 215-204-4372.